to live righteously. It's time for another episode of the Culture Hall. It's articles of news for the week of the 7th/8th of September. And this is part one of this articles of news. There will be another full episode, and that will be part two that we'll post this week.
Why? Why are we doing two?
Well, because
the whole host panel is like up in arms, like, what's going on?
What are we
changing
doing?
Format?
Well, see, here's the deal. You've been gone.
I have.
So I know as I say, hey, Lindsay. Because that's who you are.
Thank you.
No nickname, Lindsay. As I ask you what's been going on, I know that you are a talker. And that's not any sort of offense. I just know that you talk.
No offense taken.
I also know that Rob, who hasn't been on an episode in a while, is also a talker.
Sure.
And I know that both of you want to make sure that you don't miss anything. And so I don't want to shortchange anyone. And there's a lot of stuff that's been in news. And it's a day later because of Labor Day.
Okay.
So I felt like we could justify doing two articles of news episodes in the same day.
Yeah, and that's fine. I don't take offense to any of that. But I bet if you just said, hey, we need four people, I'll go next week. Like,
right.
I can wait a week. It's
right,
not
but
a big
I didn't,
deal.
But I feel like I haven't seen you in forever, and I feel like I haven't seen Rob in forever.
Okay.
And since we've sort of dropped the ball, and by we, I mean me, as far as the weekly episodes go recently, although we're going to catch up also this week, so there will be like five new episodes this week.
Oh, my gosh.
I feel like I owe someone a little something special.
Okay.
So why not?
Well, it's fine. Let's
right?
do
so
it.
So long as they're not redundant news articles.
No, if people like
different
the,
people.
The articles and news we will provide.
Right. So it's me, Richard T, and Lindsay. No
this nickname. Is like, we should just market this show because
right.
you and I want to do a show together.
Like this. I wonder if there's local media entities who might be interested in
right?
it.
Right? Can anyone help us out?
I got
really
weekends
cool.
free.
Weekends free? I have weekends free.
I got free time.
Yeah.
So I want to know from you, this last trip you went to Maine. That's the dog, by the way, that you're hearing in the background.
Yeah,
he's
I have
a huge
no,
fan of me.
Yeah, the dog's a huge fan. I took his collar off so he wouldn't jingle.
Uh-huh.
The baby's not here, so there will be no crying.
No.
Right now.
The crying you'll hear will be only from the
it
dog.
It will be Buddy.
Which is the dog's name.
Mm-hmm.
Not something,
not
somebody else.
My Buddy.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Hey, Buddy.
Hey, Buddy.
Hey, what's up, Buddy?
Buddy.
So you just got back from another trip to Maine.
And you say another because I've been on like three this summer.
Right, because you were just there and I gave you a hard time about it before. But then it seems like this trip kind of came from nowhere. So my question is how can I get on your travel plan? And you're taking the baby again and again and again and
on
again.
On planes, right? No, so the first trip to Maine came out of nowhere.
Okay.
This one has been planned for a while. So what happened was I stopped working back in March.
Well, really you stopped working in January, but that's a different discussion.
Okay. We're not going to go there. I stopped working full-time back in March and became a full-time stay-at-home mom.
Uh-huh.
And when I did that, it was kind of like, oh, well, I only have one kid. So I know moms out there are being like, oh, I don't get to just travel. You know,
right.
like I have one kid right now. She's 10 months. It allows me to do some things other moms don't get to do.
Sure.
So for my birthday, which was in May, I asked my mom if she would buy me a ticket to Maine because I really just had nothing going on. And
the baby flies free.
And
so
the baby
do
flies
it.
Free. Yeah. So they flew me out there for my birthday. In July, I went to Montauk. That was totally spur of the moment. Like my brother's friends get a house there every summer and they all live in New York City. So they can only use it on the weekends.
Mm-hmm.
And so each of the families get to use it during the week.
And you're like, hey, I'm family. Let's do this.
When my mom was like, do you think you can swing this? Because I want to go. Your dad can't go. He has to work. And I said, honey, can I swing it? And so that was really impromptu.
Best husband ever award.
Best husband ever. Hot
like,
too, by the way.
Yeah. And he's like, geez, yes, please just get out of the house.
Happy wife, happy life. That is like, I've always wanted to do some traveling. And for him, like, yes, it's expensive, but like, he's like, okay, as long as you're fulfilled, like just do what you have to do.
Which is what you think he's doing. But really it's just, he's just like, get the baby out of the house, get you out of the house. Just get me, one day where I can walk around in my unders and just not have to do stuff.
There's so much more truth to that than you even know.
I am sure of it. And then the third trip.
And then the third trip to Maine was planned. That's like our big summer kind of in August. We always go back to Maine. The whole family was there this time. I have three siblings and Austin got to go. That was his like
That's
summer break. Yeah. So that one was kind of planned. But yes, it was my third trip of the summer.
I'd like to from now on call your husband Hostin.
Hostin? Oh, I like that.
If we don't mind. everyone gets a nickname but you.
Oh. perfect. Why don't I have a nickname?
I'm working on it.
Okay, well, maybe that's just my nickname is No Nickname Lindsay.
Yeah,
okay.
But then you're broaching on just Joni territory,
right,
with
true.
No Nickname
Well,
Lindsay.
I'm just trying to figure out, am I so cool I don't have a nickname,
right.
Or am I so not cool I don't have a nickname?
Right.
Which one is it, Richie?
Right.
you'll never tell.
Kid all right on the plane?
Yeah, she did okay. Actually, I was quite impressed with this most recent trip. And having Austin there was just,
yeah,
like...
Thank you.
Yeah, it has a ring to it. Amazing for me, because the last two trips I've traveled by myself with her. Mm-hmm. And this time having a second set of hands, I was like, oh, this is easy.
I loved about it meant hot pictures of your husband for
vacation.
Oh,
yeah. Tan.
Normally, I see your pictures and I'm like, boring. Boring child. Husband, wait a minute. Where is this trip?
He knows. He knows you love him.
Sweet Austin.
I know.
What else is new?
What else is new?
You're dressed up today. Normally, no offense. Normally, when we come over and do these episodes at your house, you're not...
well, I'm dressed.
Yeah, I mean, you're not.
I'm a t-shirt and jeans kind of girl.
Yeah, you're not pajamas, but you're certainly... I mean, like today, you could go for...
an interview?
Like
perhaps?
Like General Relief Society presidency, something like that.
Whoa. Well, I'm not wearing a skirt.
And
I'm
it's
in
not
pants.
That pastel.
I have pants on.
No.
Yeah. So I couldn't go to church this
morning. No.
I wouldn't dare.
You would stand for something completely different if
Heaven
you were.
Heaven forbid I go to church in pants. Yeah. So actually, breaking news in my world, I got a new part-time gig. I can't really tell you what it is yet or who I'm working for yet.
It's not me.
I am back on the air in Salt Lake City
soon. When does that start?
Hopefully in the next month or so,
really?
But I don't have a timetable on it yet. I'm just teasing you simply because...
you're the new football announcer on BYU.
Yes! He caught the ball! He caught the ball!
No,
is
no,
that Greg Rebell?
No,
is that how he sounds?
No.
Because he totally just got like a...
He just yelled.
Yeah. He caught it! He caught it! Okay, we get it. He caught it.
Yeah. Yep,
calm
yep.
it down.
So that's not it?
No, it's not that. I am starting a new show idea.
Okay.
This was an idea that I pitched to this station and they liked it.
Cool.
And so, yeah, I'm really excited. And as soon as I can tell, it's not that I can't tell. It's just that I don't want to tell yet until it's like ready to go.
Cool.
So I'm really excited and I'll have more information on that as soon as I can.
You know what it reminds me of, sort of, though? Do you remember? This is old-timey radio Salt Lake. Do you remember, why can't I think of his name? Kurt Bester.
Sure.
Do you remember his show that was on the radio here in Salt Lake?
I don't think I was
this
here
is
then.
Not a lie, and this is mildly inappropriate, but it's too funny to pass up. There was a show that was to be for all women, a talk show for all women,
okay.
Right? And I swear to you this is true. And it's inappropriate, so I apologize. But Kurt Bester was the man on the show, and then it was like another woman or two women or something like that. And the name of the station was KUTR. So it was Cooter, and it was the name that was the station, and Kurt Bester was one of the hosts on
KUTR.
Yeah, KUTR. I can't remember what the name of the show was. It was terrible, and it didn't
what
last very long.
What frequency was that?
I can't remember.
Oh, okay.
But I just remember going, "What? Wait. Did no one, there wasn't a single person that put those things together?
Who thought through that? This is also very inappropriate, but I was thinking it was a different four-letter word.
Oh, yeah.
Whoa. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's
no.
Very inappropriate.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. But KUTR is funny, too.
Yeah.
And it doesn't start with a K.
Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah.
It starts with a W, right?
Sure.
Yeah, because it has to.
We're on the East
either,
Coast.
Either K or W.
Right.
Oh,
exactly.
My gosh. Please. So anything else new besides that?
We are remodeling our basement.
Yeah.
So I've spent the last... Labor Day weekend, there's all those sales going on, right?
Sure. Getting furniture
so,
and stuff.
Yeah, just looking for couches and carpet and paint and vanities. And
you making Austin do that when he gets home from work?
No, I love doing it. I mean, well, I've kind of caught the passion for it recently, but he's handling more of the, like, we got to put up walls and we got to tear down walls and we got to do electrical and plumbing. And,
right.
And also he's very stressed about the finances and
sure.
all that jazz.
Because that's what he does for a living.
Yes. And it is expensive to remodel your home. It
sure.
really is. I never... And
even
live,
if you do it yourself, it's still way expensive.
Oh my gosh, yeah. And it's just like, are you kidding me? Like that much money for carpet, paint, a couch, and tile in the bathroom
yeah.
is like, Oh my gosh.
Although, and why you just, want a couch in the bathroom, I don't know.
No, but couch in the living room, but carpet and paint. And it's just like, are you kidding me? Like, and that's just the bare bones of it. If I want anything to look pretty, I gotta like up the price. So it's just, it's ridiculous.
Second mortgage. Best financial advice I can ever give you.
Right.
And your husband would agree with me.
No, he wouldn't.
Equity line
is a possibility.
Sure.
Or just
get in deep.
Max out
credit cards. Get in deep.
We're going to max to the max.
It's my favorite general conference talk where it's like, charge it to the max. I can't remember if it wasn't Elder Hollander. I'd remember exactly what it was titled,
right.
But it's like credit to the max and equity line of credit on your second mortgage.
Oh,
something like
perfect.
That.
Perfect. Yeah. We'll totally
It's
do that.
In there. It's doctrine.
Yeah. Cash. I mean, and a lot of what the issue is you pay for the materials, but then you pay for the labor, right? Mm-hmm. So the labor you can't pay for on credit. Because it's like these workers that come in and they don't want credit because they need to get paid right away. And
most
yada.
Of the time you're paying them under the table because it's cheaper. Not that you're agreeing with me with silent nods, but I understand what you're talking about.
I'm shaking my head.
No,
yep. But I know what you mean. And so, yeah, you need cash. You need liquid cash. And that's hard to come by these days. So
yeah, because I only have paper cash. That's cool though. That's exciting.
Yeah, it's fun. And we live in this small sugar house. So like the real puzzle is like, how do you maximize your space, you know? And basically we went to a big box furniture place and found this couch that you can basically customize all the pieces with a chaise and a corner piece and the handles and the wood.
Cool.
And so for this flat price, you basically get to customize what you want. And that's kind of what we needed in this tight space.
That's awesome.
It's fun.
I was thinking about this story. I told this to someone else this morning, but my basement is unfinished and it's unfinished because, well, as you pointed out, it's expensive.
Sure.
And it's funny because, and I think that you would probably vouch for this as well, the home is kind of the woman's domain. Now, I understand that that's a generalized statement.
Well, it's like almost like it's supposed to be.
Right.
Yeah.
Right? Like you picked that painting was there and you picked that those paintings were there.
I hate that.
Does your husband have a place that he gets to pick how it looks?
Not all by himself, although if he did have it his way, he would just man cave out that basement big time.
The whole thing.
And I feel like he's trying to man cave it out, but I'm on the same page in that we want that to be an entertaining space and like a big sectional and like just where we can watch TV. We'll move the TV downstairs. I mean, just have a formal sitting room upstairs. So,
but does he get to have like a room where like in your bedroom, all the pictures are pictures that he picked to put up or something like that?
No. But he didn't ask, so.
But if he was like, hey.
Buddy, shh.
But if he was like, hey, I really want to have a room, would you let him?
It depends what room.
Right. Well,
yeah.
So here's the conversation. So my wife and I, this isn't braggartery, but we have a few rooms in our house.
Okay.
And as we've talked about finishing the basement.
You live in Lehigh. We live in Sugar House.
Well, we live
That's
in Bluffdale.
Same thing.
But yeah, we moved further out from the city so we could have more space.
Mm-hmm.
And, what I have said to her is, when we finish the basement, I would like a room in this house. I don't care what room it is, but I would like a room where I get to pick how that room is decorated and what's in that room. Oh, buddy, am I making you sad?
Do you want me to put him in the back room?
Yes, please.
Okay, hold on. Buddy, come on.
Hey, buddy. See you later, buddy. Bye, buddy. Now he can rattle the door while we continue. There we go. So I said to my wife, I said, you know what? I just want a room. I don't care what room it is. I don't care if it's a small room. I don't care if it's a side room. I don't care what it is. But I want a room where I get a pick. And it can be as tacky or as you know, great decorated as it can. But I want to have a room. And the rest, I said, whatever you want. I'll help you pay for whatever we're doing. Whatever we're doing.
What did she say?
But I want one room. Well, it's funny because she's like, well, what do you need the room for? And I was like, I just want a room. I want a room where I feel like, you know, I can put a Broadway poster if I want, or I can put a bunch of junk and shut the door and it's my room and that's it. Well, what do you need a room for? Okay. We have several.
It's not about the room. It's having your space.
Yeah. I just want to have a room. Well, I need a room. Okay. Well, let's have you have a room. I'd like a room as well. And so I don't know if it's that we can't afford the room necessarily. It's that we haven't decided which room would become my room. And that's why we haven't finished the basement.
Okay. So what would you put in this room?
Well, I've thought about having it be a place where I could record this and other things.
Yeah.
You know, kind of making a little studio.
I need that. Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't know. I really don't have any Florida plans.
There's you not, just want the
and
room.
And that's what I think what frustrates my wife the most is I'm just like, I just want a room. Well, what do you want? And I don't know. I don't know because I don't have the room yet.
Right.
But once I have the room, then I feel like I could be like, well, I have a computer in there. What are you trying to hide? Well, I'm not trying to hide anything.
Right, right, right. So I think you need to delve into the issue of does she not want you to have the room because she doesn't want you to have a room? Or does she not want you to have the room because she wants control of the decorating situation?
I don't think it's either of those things. I think that she has, because the one room in the basement that's unfinished where we've talked about, she kind of has a plan of what she wants the basement to be like.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that when I've said, hey, yeah, I'd love to have that room be that, you know, this room off the basement, big room. I think she goes, well, I'd like to have this thing there instead.
Oh, okay.
And so I think it's more of that
issue. You can't pick the room.
Yeah.
Which room would be
so maybe I could have an upstairs room.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would give you a room in the attic. Just like you can take the space that no one will ever see, but you cannot have the room right off the living room.
Right.
Yeah.
I honestly don't care what room it is. And I'd love to have her, because she could work from home, at least in some aspect, have her do an office and be like, yeah. You know what? It'd be a little bit costly, but let's do some of those French doors or whatever. Let's do this and get it all nice and everything like that. And that can be your thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I want my room at this deal. Whatever you want, I'll do it. But even if it's the smallest room in our house.
You can have the shed, honey. Yeah, but, there's the shed out back.
And that's a whole different issue.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but it's just funny, the kind of things that you don't. It's not really an argument, but that you just kind of go around in circles with your spouse where you're just like, ugh.
My husband never asked for that. If he did,
Well,
we don't have enough rooms for him to have one, but...
But if he came to you and said, hey, look, I've got this poster. This poster means a lot to me. I'd like to hang this somewhere in our house.
Absolutely. And he's kind of come to me and said, I need an office space. He wants his office space. And then he envisions, we have this kind of like bonus room downstairs, envisions a desk there with his, where he can do his accounting and keep all his files and stuff like that. And then also have a little play area for Lucy. And he pictures, you know, a little kitchenette set down there and stuff like that. So that's totally fine with me, you know, like he has this vision for it and I'll make it happen. It's kind of one of those things where he kind of pictures the space and then I kind of be like, okay, here's, that's fine. That's a fine vision.
So what I need you to do then is to come to my house and I need you to say here. No, I'm just, I would never do that.
Richie, you should have this room.
This is the room right here.
This is a good room.
And I don't.
Luck with that though.
Well, and see, and the other part of it now is the issue has now become, since it's gone around in circles enough times, it's not even about having my own space or about having my own room or about decorating anything. It's about, I want to have.
It's about winning.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So,
good luck.
Yeah,
I would.
Thank you.
I would address that issue in your relationship more so than the room.
I think it's perfectly fine where it exists. There can be agrees to disagree.
Okay. All
right. And I think that's where we've sort of settled it.
All right.
At least for now. You want to take a break and come back with actual articles of news?
Let's do it.
Running a small business today can be difficult enough. Imagine all the work you have to do to market it. Imagine the hours you put in to create promotional materials for it. Now, imagine a partner that can help you with all of that and more. Imagine Lennon Design. Lennon Design is your partner in business when you need a professional look at a price you can afford. Whether it's websites, advertising media, promotional materials, and more, Lennon Design can help you promote your business. When you need creative, affordable designs, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
Hi, this is Dan the Laptop Man from PC Laptops in Salt Lake City, Utah. You've probably heard of PC Laptops, the premier sponsor of the Salt Lake Comic Con, the greatest event of the year. Free tickets. Yep, a free ticket to Salt Lake Comic Con. Right now, with the purchase of any PC Laptops desktop or laptop computer, we'll give you a free, precious, ultra-limited, awesome Comic Con 3-day multipass. Plus, we're offering an absolutely insane deal. A brand new PC Laptops desktop computer for only $799 with a lifetime warranty. A blazing fast PC Laptops S1 desktop for only $799 and free Comic-Con Multipass. Quantities are highly limited, so hurry into any PC Laptops location right now or call us at 1-877-596-SAVE or check us out at PCLaptops.com. That's PCLaptops.com. An amazing computer for $799 and a free Comic-Con Multipass. PCLaptops.com.
It's time for the second half of Articles of News, wherein we do actual Articles of News.
You can't lose Articles of News.
And I think we'll go... Man. I think we'll go here. I thought this was kind of a cool story. 90 years ago, Ella Hoskins turned 12 years old and she joined the Young Women. She would have been a beehive, but that designation would not exist for another 25 years. Beehives didn't exist. There was also no personal progress program or Young Women medallion, but she earned one anyway. At 102 years old, Ella Hoskins has already seen more days than most of us could ever dream of. She's lived through both world wars, a Great Depression, and she used to take a horse and buggy to school. She was born on October 17th, 1912, and has been a member of the church her entire life. Says, quote, practicing my faith all my life has brought peace and contentment to me. It has strengthened my testimony and given me assurance that God is watching over me. She was widowed at the age of 51, half of her life ago.
Oh, my gosh.
She eventually retired from her job as a school teacher and served 8 different missions for the church, all between the years of 1980 and 2006. So if you're doing math, yep, that's right. She served a mission at 93 years old.
Wow.
Her unparalleled desire to serve the Lord prompted her to make a habit of giving her all to the callings that she received, including her call as a personal progress advisor for the girls in her ward. After she got sick in December, she had to relocate to an assisted living home, but wasn't released from her calling, so the girls came to her home for the meetings. One day, one of them suggested that Ella earn a personal progress award, so she went to work. Regularly meeting with the bishop to discuss her progress, Ella put in hours upon hours of spiritual preparation to qualify for the award. She doesn't just preach the gospel, she lives it. To earn the medallion, a young or not-so-young woman, in this case, must demonstrate mastery of 8 Christian virtues. Can you name them?
Faith, young women? Divine nature, individual worth. You know, they've changed since I was a youth.
Okay, give me the one.
Knowledge, choice, and accountability, good works, and integrity, and then there's something else. There's another one, or there's something that has another one on it, or something like that.
I don't know. I just wanted to see your knowledge.
Okay. Well, yeah. They've also added a line to the Young Women's theme, which every time I go into Young Women's and say the theme, I forget that line, because I haven't been in Young Women's since I was
a young
18.
Woman, which is a while ago. Anyway, she completed her personal progress. Some of them were more difficult than others, but in a ceremony held by the Dixie Ward in Layton, Utah, she received her Young Women Medallion in front of all the members of the Young Women's General Presidency.
Good for her.
Yep.
I remember doing personal progress. It's
tough
difficult.
Work.
Yeah, because some of the things are easy. Some of them are like, read a scripture and tell a leader why you like that scripture. And some of them are like, go clear a trail and tell a leader about the value of hard work. And you're like, well, I'm not doing that one. That's way too much work.
Clear a trail.
Yeah. So I commend those young women. They do a lot of work.
For sure. Mm-hmm. Congratulations, Ella. 103 years old. So for everyone that's like, it's too late now.
Justification. I'm going to tell you about my friend Tim Gates.
Okay.
Do you know Tim Gates?
Brother Gates. I don't.
He is actually a Brother Gates. Tim Gates is a lead singer of a country band named Due West.
Oh, sure.
Have you heard of them?
Yeah. So this is interesting. One of them, his dad is from Bluffdale.
Really? Yeah. I don't know which one.
I don't know either. But they do a barn party.
Sure.
In Bluffdale. And they set up a big stage behind a barn in a field, and they play once a year.
Tell me when is that?
It just was like 2 weeks ago.
How did I miss that? Time. Why didn't I see it on social media?
Well, because they don't tell anyone.
Oh, my gosh.
They word of mouth it. They don't make a graphic. They don't share anything like that. It's just, hey, barn party Tuesday night.
You guys, you know how there are some groups out there that, like, they may never make it on the radio, and they'll I'm not saying they'll never, because I really sincerely hope they do, but like you may never hear about them, but they are just like so amazing. Like the tightest harmonies you'll ever hear and just bone chingling. That's not even a word.
Bone chilling music. Tingling.
Yeah. You just like feel it when you hear it. This is this group, Due West. Okay. And so.
D-U-E.
D-U-E.
Not D-O.
Yes.
Due West.
Due West.
All right.
Okay.
I will.
Due as in we're heading west.
Yeah. As in, we're headed back.
Yes. So, Tim Gates, lead singer, Matt Lopez in the band, also a guy named Brad Hall. So, if you know any of those guys, they're in this band called Due West. The three of them also contribute to the Nashville Tribute to the Prophet band. And I think it's just that one. I know there's Nashville Tribute to the something other, but there's just the one band, right?
I think so.
They've made a few albums. And so these three guys, along with a handful of their other buddies, are in this Nashville tribute group. Okay, so Tim Gates, lead singer of the band, just got hit up to do an I'm a Mormon thing.
They're still doing those.
Yeah, because I feel like you have to be kind of a big deal to do that, right? Like, not everyone gets to do one. They, like, ask you to do one, right?
Yeah, they make me sad.
Why?
Because I was asked to do one, and I wasn't a member of the church at the time. I hadn't been rebaptized.
So you couldn't do it?
Right.
Really?
Yeah. Well, what am I going to do?
Why can't you just say,
I'm a Mormon. Nah.
Well, why can't you just say, tell your story? Like, that's what the church is about, right?
Well, because the punchline is, I'm a Mormon.
But you were going to be one.
No, I know. And they should do one with me now even more.
Yeah, absolutely. You have a cool story.
But it makes me sad.
Okay, so Tim Gates, is someone here? Okay, someone I know. Sorry, I just always lock the door. Tim Gates, look him up. He just got asked to do an I'm a Mormon thing, and he is so phenomenal. He's just an amazing, amazing guy. So go look him up and go look up the music for the Nashville Tribute Band and go look up Due West, D-U-E. And you
he's such
you
a great friend
be,
of yours. Why can't we get him on the show?
We can. Okay. I can reach out to him.
Please.
Let's do it.
If he's a friend like you say he is.
They almost sang at my wedding. Because almost. Scheduled.
You know who also almost sang at my wedding?
Who?
You too. They almost sang at my wedding.
Do you know who did sing at my wedding?
No, who?
David Osmond.
Shut up.
Yes.
Really?
Yes. I asked our wedding song was a Due West song. I asked them to come perform it for us and play at our wedding, and they couldn't make the schedules work, but they were willing, which was amazing.
He must be a pretty good friend if they were
considering
it.
I met them when I was working in radio, and they knew the host I was working with at the time, so I met them through that, and then a different radio station I worked for, they came and performed one of our Christmas concerts, and they're just unbelievable.
Just didn't work out.
Yeah, didn't work out. So I'll reach out to them and see if we can get them on, because they would be a fascinating interview. They do tour all over the country and do stuff with Due West. But yeah, they're awesome.
Tell me if you think this story is weird.
Okay.
The loss of a child is a devastating experience for a mother and father, particularly when that child has only lived a short time. To make matters worse, parents are burdened with other concerns and make bearing the grief nearly impossible. Arranging funerals can take exorbitant amounts of time, energy, and money, all of which are usually in short supply for these young, grieving families. One LDS woman is seeking to lighten the load. Her name is Melody Penrod, a resident of Springville, Utah, which is just south of Provo. She's created a nonprofit charity organization called Tender Mercies, which repurposes donated wedding dresses into appropriate burial clothing for infants.
Oh my gosh. No, that's amazing.
Is it kind of weird?
No. Why would it be weird?
I don't know.
Listen, I just barely took my wedding dress to the cleaners to get it boxed up. And I'm like...
Like that preservation
thing
that they do.
Yeah, preserved. It was already starting to turn yellow. I've been married for 5 years. And I was like...
The marriage is turning yellow or the dress?
The dress. Because I'm married to Hostin.
Oh, yeah.
And he gets better looking with age. But I was like, what do you do with this?
Right.
Like, what do you do with your wedding dress? The only thing... I took my mom's wedding dress and turned it into a temple dress.
Oh, cool.
And so it would, you know, be like such an honor for me if someday Lucy took my wedding dress and used it somehow. Maybe it'll be out of style by then. Maybe it won't fit her, whatever. Mm-hmm. But like she could take the lace from it and make a veil. And that's just like a way to like honor.
Yeah, pass it on.
Yeah.
I hadn't considered that. But
I think that is unbelievable. Like if, oh gosh, anxiety just thinking about something happening to Lucy. But just like I think that would be so meaningful to have her I can't even talk about it. It's like, it just brings me anxiety, but like, yeah, just have something like that, that I knew was with her. I think it's amazing.
I'll take back the weird.
Yeah. Why was it weird?
I don't know, you didn't give an opinion on that. Well, I just like, I just read it. Right. And I was like, is that, and maybe it was just the idea of young kids passing away and then being uncomfortable with that, that maybe I just was like, I don't.
Well, it's like, yeah, no parent should have to deal with that. And anything that could bring them peace and comfort during that time has to be a good thing.
This woman, Melody Penrod, says, I had the strong impression while watching the October General Conference that I was supposed to be doing something different. She desperately wanted to be in the service of others to bring comfort to those in need, but wasn't sure what she had to offer. Penrod made a New Year's resolution to discover this hidden purpose, and she found her answer quickly. After reading online about a desperate need of grieving mothers, many babies pass away due to miscarriage, premature birth, stillbirth, or SIDS, sudden infant death syndrome, and finding burial clothing for these sweet children is often a challenge. After all, some of them are nearly just the size of your palm.
Mm-hmm.
Talking with bereavement counselors at the NICU, Penrod was shocked to learn that they usually didn't have any fabric to clothe the deceased child, so they often wrapped the body in a washcloth or paper towel before returning it to the mother. It was this revelation that moved her to action. I had a strong feeling that this was my calling to serve. So, you know, the more I read about it, I feel bad that I even said weird. But
well, I can see. So weird maybe is what you meant by that, is like a miscarried baby, like, is, can be the size of your fingernail. Would you make
I think you absolutely would. I just didn't. I hadn't even thought about it.
Yeah.
Hadn't even thought about
it. But I'm just saying, seeing a dress this big, the size of a peanut, might be hard for some.
Right.
You know, like, I haven't been through that experience, so I can't speak to it. But for me, it would be really hard to see that small of an item.
You know, like, I happen to know someone. Come on over. Molly Jenny.
Hi, Jenny.
Who's not really going to be in this episode. She's going to be in the part two episode, but she happened to be
here. You just came over to hang?
I have something for you.
For me?
Yeah.
What is it?
I'll show you in a minute. It's a surprise.
You didn't.
It's not scotcheroos, though, but it's zucchini bread.
Spoiler alert, apparently.
Oh, yeah, that's not a surprise anymore. Okay,
that's so nice of you.
Anyway, so because of your experience, talk real quick about this.
Yeah, so my second child, my first son, was stillborn
at
30 and a half weeks.
Oh, my gosh.
Can't
do it.
30 and a half weeks.
30 and a half weeks. Well, so when he... when he was born, there was still like a measure of, it wasn't me, like I'm reading, like I'm talking scripture, a measure of umbilical cord. And he weighed 3 pounds, 13 ounces.
Babies can survive at 30 weeks.
Right. Yeah. He didn't. But he was about, I mean, his casket was 18
I didn't mean that insensitively. No, I just like.
And I didn't mean to be brusque about it. No. He didn't. I know some babies do, and he did not.
It's just got really
uncomfortable.
Okay,
I'm sorry, guys. Yeah. No. His casket was 18 inches long. He was about, I'm holding my hands up, so sorry, like listening audience. A fourth of a cubit?
Yeah.
I don't know. He was teensy. But my sister and a friend from when I was a teenager, while I was in the hospital, in labor, they went to, there's like a store in American Fork, which is north of Provo, and that sells this very, it fills this need. It's not a donation like this, like the article that you're covering, but they purchased a very small white burial outfit for my son. That being said, I'm really impressed with this woman because, people were so wonderful in their support in this kind of unique but completely tragic and out of the blue situation. One woman made a blanket for me, you know, or for my son rather. And so we spent like 4 hours with his body. And so I had the blanket kind of nearby, but he was buried with it. It would have been nice to have something with more personal significance.
Sure.
To have him buried.
Oh, Jenny, I can't even. I can't even.
Yeah, we can talk about it another time.
Okay. But
his birthday's coming up.
Oh my gosh.
He's turning 14.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I can't even.
So, but I'm really impressed with this idea.
It's okay. Great. So as a woman who's been through this experience, you're saying that would be something that would bring you comfort
without question.
And it wouldn't be weird for you to see a little peanut sized outfit. Cause some babies miscarry. Yeah. They don't have that. They're literally the size of your fingernail.
Right.
Right. Like,
right. And whereas my son was almost full term,
right?
The size that he was, I was warned before he was born. You know, we don't know what he's going to look like. We never know in these situations,
right?
Because I knew going into the hospital that he had passed away. But he looked just like a sleeping teeny tiny baby.
Yeah.
So for me, it would not be weird. That being said, a lot of women I've learned through this entire experience, because it has been 14 years.
Yeah.
I've had a lot of people come to me, and I'm fine with it, saying, my sister went through this. My neighbor went through this.
Yeah.
I don't know what to do. I don't know what to say. And one really important thing to remember is that everybody grieves differently.
Uh-huh.
There's an option, at least at the hospital where I delivered my son, where you don't have to do anything. You can just kind of donate the baby's body to science if you'd rather. We chose to bury him. He's in the Provo City Cemetery. But not everybody chooses to, and not everyone chooses to talk openly about it.
Sure.
And that's fine.
Yeah.
There's not a right or wrong way to grieve. For me, that would have been really cool to have kind of a significant, you know, some sort of, whether it's his outfit or something else with familial significance.
Yeah.
So if people want to, if they're interested in donating to that, it's called Tender Mercy Angels. And this woman gives her full-on address and everything, so I'll give it here. 221 East 2475 South, Springville, Utah, 84663.
That's unreal. Let's see. Let's lighten it up a bit, shall we?
Okay.
I don't know.
That was
Hashtag Thug Mormon.
Yeah.
Did you see this trending?
And you can actually, there's a post at theculturalhall.com that Matthew put together of his top 10 favorite Thug Mormon.
Okay, I failed to see that one. But basically how this whole thing started, if you're not familiar with hashtag Thug Mormon, this Nebraska sports anchor, and correct me if I'm wrong, I'm just paraphrasing this, Nebraska sports anchor named Mike Welch was talking about the BYU brawl last season.
At the end of the bowl game.
Yeah, what was it? I can't even remember who they were playing. Miami, right? In Miami of Ohio.
I don't know
if that's who they're playing. They were in Miami.
Okay.
I'm real good at sports.
Yeah.
Austin would
we're
know
killing
this.
It.
But he tweeted, he was talking about the brawl, and he said, if you're going to be a religious school with a football team full of thugs, you have to be willing to accept the backlash.
Mm-hmm.
And basically calling these guys thugs, even though they claim to be religious, and use the hashtag Thug Mormon.
Sure.
So Thug Mormon instantly caught on. It was trending in Salt Lake City at one point. But I saw a picture of like brass knuckles with CTR rings all across them. Hashtag
yep.
Thug Mormon life. It says goes on a date 2 weeks before their 16th birthday. Hashtag Thug Mormon. let's see. When being helped with the prayer growing up, if I didn't like what was whispered in my ear, I would shake my head and say no. Hashtag Thug Mormon. I take 3 pieces of bread during the sacrament on Fast Sunday.
Yeah.
Hashtag Thug Mormon.
Mormon.
So stuff like that. I say no to callings. Hashtag Thug Mormon.
Mormon.
Yeah. So I loved that. It was so funny to me when I saw it. So I'm sure we can come up with our own, but
yeah.
I don't have any.
And if you go to theculturalhall.com, you can see Matthew. He scoured the internet and found his top 10 favorite ones. And they're all actually embedded there, so you can see who did them and everything like that.
I bring up controversial topics in Relief Society.
Yeah.
Hashtag Thug Mormon. That was mine. I just came up with that.
Nice.
Thank you.
Thank
Way you.
To go. Going on the sports thing, did you watch the BYU football game on Saturday?
We caught the end of it. And I don't even like BYU. Sorry. I don't.
Yeah.
I'm a Utah girl and Utah
Thug
State.
Mormon.
I'm a Thug Mormon. I don't even like BYU. Hashtag
yeah.
Thug Mormon. But we saw the end, and yeah, I was happy. It was cool. It was cool to watch.
Here's a non-exaggerated story about Saturday's game. By the way, BYU beat Nebraska in Nebraska, which is a big deal. It's the first time Nebraska's won their opening game in like 25 years, and it's the first time that a coach in like 5 or 6 coaches has lost his first game as a coach. But I can't remember where. Oh, my kid had a concert on Saturday, right? I'm listening to the BYU game on the radio, kind of, but my wife sort of hates talk radio.
Do you care about BYU football that much?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, no,
okay.
I love it. I love it. It's one of only a couple of things, Go Cubs Go, that I care about. But I was sort of listening to it, but my wife doesn't love the talk radio, so I had it down. I wasn't really focused or paying attention. drop the kid off. We get home, and I'm like, oh, hey, I'm going to watch the last, it was the fourth quarter. I think there was like 10 minutes left of the BYU game. I'll just watch it on TV. So I go to the TV, and I'm flipping through with the cable, and I'm not finding it, right? And I'm searching with the search feature, and I'm not finding it. So I'm like, crap. Well, I can probably stream it up on the computer upstairs. So I go up into the, you know, thing. I'm trying to, you know, stream. I'm searching stream BYU game. Can't find it. So finally, I'm like, well, what channel is this supposed to be on? I know that it's still going on. So I'm like, what channel? And found out it was on ABC, which is Channel 4 here in Utah. So then I go back downstairs, and I guess the game went a little bit long because, like, the preview of what it was supposed to be watching was something else. That's why I didn't find it before.
Okay.
So I click into the BYU game, and by the time I did all that, there was 6 seconds left in the BYU game. And I was like, great. Okay, 6 seconds, and I see we're down
by one,
and I was like, okay, well, I'll watch the remainder of this thing.
And they had the ball.
So I watched the incomplete pass, you know, off the sidelines, and I was like, okay, and there's like 1 second left. And so I caught literally... of the game, the last 6 seconds of
the
game.
That's all you needed to watch, apparently.
Tanner Mangum is now the coach, or not the coach, now the quarterback for BYU because Taysom Hill, one that they were putting a considerable amount of faith in, left.
No, he got injured.
Yeah, due to an injury.
Oh.
I was going there.
Oh,
left
okay.
Due to an injury.
Oh, okay.
A season ending, and I think it's career ending. At least as far as BYU goes,
and
injury.
That sucks, man. That's like, because it's like his third or fourth injury, right?
Yep. He was injured after last year, too. He fractured a bone in his foot in the opening quarter, but Tanner Mangum came in and completed that pass there with 1 second left in the game to give BYU the win. You can find it at theculturalhall.com, but it's cool to watch Tanner Mangum watch him self throw that pass on the plane. Now, here's the thing that's interesting. Tanner Mangum's older brother is a senior at Idaho State.
Utah
I want to say. No, I'm pretty sure it's Idaho State.
Okay.
Sports Networks does like the top 10 plays of the week, right? Tanner Mangum's older brother was number two with this one-armed catch, just awesome one-arm catch. And he got beat by his younger brother, Tanner, for that. Because of the toss there.
Tanner was number one and his brother was number two.
Yeah.
You know why that happened?
Why what happened?
Why all those amazing plays happened.
Because they paid their tithing?
Because they're living right.
Okay.
They're living right. Yeah. I mean, that's the only way it could happen.
Well, God cares about football quite
a bit. Absolutely. And there's no other way.
Right.
There is no other way.
It's not talent.
It's not talent.
It's
God-given talent.
Yeah.
That's right.
And he can take it away.
That's right.
What other stories do you have?
Okay. This is going to go a little bit heavier.
Well, I may not let you do this right here. I just wondered what else you have.
Oh, I've got why I left the church is also why I'm going back.
Okay. We'll keep that.
And then I have 6 questions with a black Mormon feminist.
Oh, yeah. We'll do that one, too.
Okay.
Okay. So this one. Some students at BYU could face hundreds of dollars in fines if they stay with BYU's student health plan. Reason being, the BYU health plan doesn't comply with federal law, in part because it doesn't cover birth control. So under the Affordable Care Act, there's a certain elements that have to come with your health care, right? These are people who get insurance, health insurance through the university.
So like employees?
Not necessarily,
students?
But students can get health insurance through the school too.
Oh,
they did it at
that.
Southern Utah University.
Okay.
Some just choose to do it that way.
Okay.
But a grace period for the plan to comply with President Barack Obama's 2010 health care ended on August 31st, BYU spokesman Todd Hollingshead said. BYU, which is owned by the Mormon Church, doesn't cover birth control because the school in Provo believes it's an individual decision that the university shouldn't be involved in. Hollingshead said, that's not something that we're going to weigh in on and be involved in as an individual choice, he said. He declined to say if BYU had religious or moral objections. So they're not saying we're opposed to birth control.
All
they're
right.
just saying our health insurance doesn't cover it. The student plan does cover contraception for some medical conditions, such as ovarian cysts or endometriosis, that could be helped by birth control. Hollingshead said, the school offers insurance for its 4,000 employees that also does not cover birth control, but that plan was grandfathered under exemptions in the health care law, Hollingshead said. The Utah-based Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints doesn't object to birth control on religious grounds, as some other faiths do. The faith instead tells church members that decisions about birth control and its consequences rest within each married couple.
Thank goodness.
Other universities like Notre Dame have challenged the federal health care law's rules about birth control coverage on religious grounds. Beyond BYU's birth control requirements, the plan doesn't meet other federal standards about spending on actual care versus administrative costs and how much it will pay throughout the year. So it's just an interesting thing. Some 8,000 students enrolled in the student health plan may qualify for one of the law's exemptions, many of which are based on financial hardship.
So it's not a religious thing, but you can't get birth control under BYU's health insurance.
Right. And that's just one of a few of the issues. So they're going to have to resolve it, or those people who get health insurance through BYU will be fine. Because you have to have things, certain things covered
right.
under the Affordable Care Act, or it's a fine.
Oh, I see. Interesting.
You don't have to worry about it because Hostin's covered you with your great insurance.
True.
I don't have to
and
cover it.
And abstinence is great.
Right?
100% covered. Okay.
Wait, what? What? Your husband?
Hostin?
Wait a minute. I'm sorry.
Should we switch
topics? Poor Hostin. yeah, let me do this one real quick.
Okay.
After receiving part of his mother's liver in an organ transplant, a Sandy, Utah teen went on to win gold in several events at the, and I didn't know about this, and that's why I'm bringing up this story, the 2015 World Transplant Games.
That's a thing?
No idea.
Wow.
Ashton Arndt, who's 18, he was born with severe jaundice and couldn't gain weight. When his liver failed, his mother discovered she was a match and donated part of her liver to him when he was 6 months old. "I've come a long way," he said, laughing. As Arndt got older, he discovered that he liked running. He represented Team USA and competed in his first World Transplant Games in Mar del Plata, Argentina. He won the gold in 1,500 and 800-meter races in his 18 to 29 age group and took silver in the 400-meter race. He dedicated his 800-meter race to Brittany Scadlock, a Roy woman who died in April while serving a mission.
That's a cool story.
Right?
Cool
I had
story,
no idea.
Hans.
If
the
I
ev- World if, Transplant Games.
Yeah, if I ever have something, I might be an Olympian.
So if your appendix bursts or you get a new kidney.
You don't get a new appendix.
Oh, that's true. If you get a new kidney, you can compete.
Yeah.
All right.
In the World Transplant Games.
That's wicked cool. I feel like I could place in the World Transplant Games.
Well, you don't have anything that's fake, do you?
No.
Or that's from someone else?
No.
Here,
I don't.
Let me give you something. Then you can compete.
Okay. I just want to compete on that level. Okay. So remember when the church came out with that essay, basically shedding some more light on race in the priesthood?
Mm-hmm.
The church still kind of unpacking parts of its history, releasing the series of essays. This was one of them, Race in the Priesthood. It was in 2013 when they released it. I think this was recently, 9/3. So just this week, Huffington Post released an article called Six Questions with a Black Mormon Feminist.
Okay.
And I found this interesting, not because I should care, I guess, but I don't really care about the issue. Well, no, I care about the issue.
You care about the issue of women in priesthood?
Yes, I do. This issue just isn't something I'm like...
It doesn't fire you up like other
things
do.
I don't have my pitchfork out about this one.
Okay.
But to her, obviously, this is a huge issue. And anytime an outside media outlet posts something about Mormons, I think it's interesting. You know, why did Huffington Post, a nationally run organization, care to do this interview with a Black Mormon feminist, you know?
So what are the questions?
So the questions are, tell us about yourself. Where were you born? Was faith a big part of your childhood? And she just kind of gives a background. And then it says you attend BYU, but it was Brigham Young who announced in 1852 that Black men could no longer have the priesthood. How do you feel about that? Do you think Mormons talk enough about the church's past struggles with racism? And she says, I do go to BYU, and Brigham Young held many racist beliefs. I don't think we talk about these issues enough. When we understand the context of his time and him as a person, we gain a clearer picture of why and how the church carried out and passed on racist practices.
Mm-hmm.
So I like that answer because she's a Black woman. It affects her directly, but she's saying like, look, that was the time. That was what was going on. And we can't really fault him for, we can fault him for that, but like we should have an open mind about that. You know, today now it feels appalling that it was ever like that.
Right.
But in the time that that was what it was like. The other thing I found interesting about the article was it says, have you experienced racism yourself from members of your ward or the wider LDS community? And she says, I continue to experience racism mainly in the form of racial microaggressions, she calls them. As an example, I'm often told how articulate I am. This is a microaggression that is rooted in false belief.
You know, for a black woman.
That's what I'm thinking. I'm like, who says that to someone?
And by no means am I defending, but I have noticed myself to say dumb things.
Well, I think them, but I don't say them. You're probably different. But, like, I would never go up to a black person, even at church, and be like, you're very articulate.
Yeah.
Like, I would never say that.
But
like,
I noticed.
Maybe that's where racism exists, you know, just people who say that stuff.
I notice that I'll just say dumb stuff all the time. Not like, intentional. There's not any sort
of... Hey, do you want to be my one black friend?
Yeah. Stuff like that.
Because I need to say I'm not racist because I have one black friend. Yeah. Do you want to be it?
With no amount of malice or anything like that, but I notice I will either think something and then I have a ton of self-loathing because I was like, well, why did I think that? That's not real. That's right. Not the issue. That's not even an issue. Or I'll just say something where it's like, bleh, bleh, and then I just wish I could push that back in.
Honestly, for us in Utah, I just think it's a matter of experience. We don't have experience with a lot of black people. So
right.
It's almost like we don't know what to say.
Right.
And I put myself in this because I grew up in Maine and now I live in Utah.
Yeah, two states.
Yeah, that just have all white people. So I'm certainly not racist, don't feel racist by any means, but I fly to like Atlanta and I get in the airport and I'm like, oh, I am not
different.
In Utah anymore. Yeah, and it is.
Even
that's just
that
the way it
could
is.
Be considered kind of racist.
That's a microaggression that I kind of experience. But it's not through any fault of my own, I feel like. So, you know, hopefully in her situation, this woman that they interviewed, she just feels like people have good intentions, but just say stupid things like we do or think stupid things. So I thought that article was interesting.
I've got what you have one more, right?
What
is
was
that right?
It?
Maybe not. We'll go.
Oh no, the one. Oh yeah. The article, the, why I left the church.
Okay.
Is also why I'm going back.
Let's do, I've got two more and you've got that one. So why don't I go one of mine near and yours and then the other one.
Perfect.
Here. World Congress of Families coming to the state of Utah. Elder M. Russell Ballard, a member of the Quorum of the 12 Apostles, will be the keynote speaker. There are expected to be 2,500 conference participants that will hear from over 200 speakers, many of whom are key figures in religion and family scholarship. This will go on the 27th through the 30th. It's been met with some protest and controversy by critics who claim that the Congress is an attack on the LGBT community. Anyway, so it's the World Congress of Families, the 9th. It's the first Congress to be hosted in an American city, and it will be hosted here in Salt Lake. It's hosted by the Sutherland Institute, a conservative public policy think tank. It's expected to bring people all around the world here to Utah.
What does the Congress of Families do?
It defines families.
Oh, good. Thank you for telling me what my family should look like.
And beyond all that, though, like, let me see if I can find a good definition of the World Congress of Families.
I'm sure it's well-meaning. It's just
But some would say because of their strict definition of what a family is, that it's biased towards the LGBT community. That's
right.
That's where there's that. Let's see.
Well, that is an issue that I feel like we look over so much in the church. And I find this a lot when I'm sitting in Relief Society and getting lessons from well-meaning teachers, is that we assume everyone's family looks just like it's supposed to, in air quotes, you know, mom,
or like
dad,
how theirs was.
Yeah, exactly. And if anyone's sitting in that Relief Society room and their family doesn't look like the nuclear LDS family, they instantly feel out of place. And I don't ever want someone to come to church feeling out of place. That is something I'll get my pitchfork out about, because I just think that that needs to be paid attention to a little bit more.
We need to be way more sensitive to it.
Yeah.
Ty Cobb, not the old-timey baseball player, but the director of Human Rights Campaign Global, said some speakers at the World Congress of Families events have publicly supported laws that criminalize homosexuality in countries like Russia and Uganda. They love to use the language of the, quote, natural family, and they love to talk about what they're doing as if it's wholesome and hearty. But unfortunately, by excluding a segment of society and actually advocating for further marginalization of folks that don't fit in that definition, they're doing real harm.
Yeah.
But it'll be interesting to see what Elder M. Russell Ballard of the Quorum in his keynote address
talks about. That's cool. Okay, I read an article yesterday from LDS Living called Why I Left the Church is Also Why I'm Going Back. So stories like this are so interesting to me right now because this is
good. Thinking about leaving the church.
No.
Because you're thinking about going back to church?
Probably. No.
Because you're thinking about leaving the church and then going back so you can tell the story.
No, it's just ever since I went through my postpartum issues, I feel like, you know what? Back off, okay? Too soon. Still within a year of having a baby.
Okay.
I'm still allowed.
I got 2 more months. Then those jokes will be hilarious.
I have very much gone through a period of, I guess you'd call it soul searching, really, where it's like, I kind of question everything I was ever told, you know, just because I was having so much anxiety, I didn't know where it was coming from. And I had to stem it all the way back to the way I was raised and growing up and my mom doing her best to raise us in the gospel. And I very much find myself trying not to say those canned answers that they always tell us to say, you know,
I
really am trying to, like, if someone asks me a question, answer it in the way I truly believe. I'm also really trying to figure out the whys, like why I live it, why, you know, stuff like that. So whenever I see articles like this, I'm instantly intrigued about why I left the church and why I'm going back and stuff like that. So that gives you a little context into why I really liked this article. Basically, this woman talks about, she was, you know, Relief Society go-getter. She was the person at church. You know, those people in your ward that are just like, they are always serving. They're always doing something. They're the people that you constantly feel not good enough because of.
Right.
She was one of those people. And not because she
that's
was
why she's
trying.
Going back because the church needs her.
No, well, no, that she wasn't
getting
trying
done
to make.
And she's going to have to come back and show everyone how to do it.
She was the person who people looked up to. She was that person. But then she left the church, making a conscious. This wasn't like, oh, I slept in one Sunday and made it a habit kind of thing. This was, I made a conscious decision to leave the church. Basically, just said I was done. I was done trying to impress everyone. I was done trying to live up to people's expectations. I was tired of giving all of me with not feeling anything in return. She just basically said, I quit. I no longer wanted to do it. So then she says she kind of spiraled into this period of anxiety and panic, spotted with bouts of depression and fluctuating hormones. Put her in the hospital.
See, you stop going to church,
right?
And God will get you.
It just spirals downward. I really related to that part of the story because my anxiety was postpartum onset, but it, you know, that really resonated with me that she was kind of having these same anxieties that I was. Then she talks about starting to rebuild. Basically, the stay in the hospital was like a wake up call for her. Like, she had nowhere to go but up, she said. She did something that got her, you know, in to see the bishop. She never said what it was, never alluded to it, said it
sin.
Really hurt her family. I was trying, like, obviously I want to know what it is. Tell me what the sin is. Come on. That's the best part of the story.
Oh, show your past transgressions.
I just want to know.
It helps me.
At least I'm not that bad, you know? But I was gathering that it was something infidelity related, but I'm totally, totally speculating.
Sure, you're totally speculating.
I have no idea what it was.
Microaggression against white women.
Exactly. Against women who leave the church. She found hope again in the words, let go. she was finally able to, and it was even after months of like the repentance process, not taking the sacrament, all of those things she did, but she could never like feel forgiven. She mm-hmm. never, she could never let the weight of this sin go. And she was inactive for nearly a year. And kind of just like let go, like all of her circle, like nobody knew about it. She right. just, she just stopped going. Nobody knew why, until she like, I think it was like a talk or something. But
she fell
but
asleep
the words,
one night with her child and the DVD from Frozen played over and
let
over
it go,
again.
Let it go.
And she woke up. Can't hold it back anymore. It was Peter Breinholt singing Let It Go.
Anyways, she came back to the church basically on the realization that she could not do this life alone. She could not do this life on her own. She was not in control. She had tried to be in control for so long, and she couldn't do it. And it wasn't until she let Christ in that she was able to let go. And that to me was a true testimony of someone who was in it for the right reasons. And I liked that story because it resonated with my situation.
Cool. All right. We'll close on this. This is from Wyoming.
Wyoming?
This is, letters to the editor going back and forth at each other.
Mm.
One woman whose name is Jill Ottman wrote that Mormons are part of the contributors to the rants that oppress women, talking about modesty.
Jenny, I can see your shoulders. I can see your shoulders right now.
So I'm wearing her shoulders.
Skank.
Microaggression.
Sorry. Microaggression against skanks.
So this woman, Harmon is her last name, writes an article back. And I'll just share a couple of things. You can read the whole drama and saga at theculturalhall.com. But she shares this. To me, being modest is all about my identity as a daughter of God. When I dress modest, I'm telling myself and God that I don't need the approval of men or anyone else. The affirmation I need comes from myself and from Him. I am currently raising two daughters, 6 years old and 18 months, and my deepest desire for them is to have that kind of identity and relationship with God. I want them to know that if men are attracted to them, it shouldn't be because of the size of their breasts or the shape of their figure, but rather for their sound mind and goodness within them. Hopefully, the type of man who is attracted to a person like that will reciprocate those characteristics. And then she goes on to say, it's scary to me that I'm raising children in a time where almost every time I pick up the newspaper, I read an article about a child being raped or molested. I believe a big factor in this is pornography. Never in the history of the world has pornography been more prevalent thanks to the internet and wireless devices. If you want to talk about women being oppressed, this is the issue to fight, not modesty. Thousands of women and girls are forced into this industry through sex trafficking. If there's a culprit to be named for influencing the mind of our young men, this should be it. What does pornography teach young men about healthy love and relationships and respecting women? A therapist who worked with sex offenders once wrote to a woman's organization that, quote, provocative magazines, even ones that simply imply sexual overtones, can act as triggers for individuals struggling with issues related to inappropriate sexual behavior. Again, in the end, the choice of whether to molest or act out sexually lies in the person who did it. But you can't blame the modestly dressed woman for wanting to help in the fight, even in the slightest way.
Fight on, sister.
So that's it. You can find all those links available at theculturalhall.com. That is the end of part one of the episode of Articles of News for the week of the 7th/8th of September.
Top that second hour.
Yeah.
What's up?
You take that.
Bring it on.
In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you.
On the back row.
Oh, wait. I skipped a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, I was going to say.
We hope that this episode has nourished and strengthened your body.
And that when the time comes, you can travel home in safety.
And if you weren't healthy enough to listen this week, that you'll be healthy enough to listen next week.
And that you won't do microaggressions
racistly. And that you keep your shoulders covered.
At all times. Even when I'm working out.
In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you.
On the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat.